Thank you for having me back. It's getting to be a tradition that I come the Sunday after Thanksgiving. I may be, in fact, considered the Thanksgiving turkey. Or the leftovers. So, you may remember, at least some of you, that I was the interim minister here 8 years ago. That means that I filled in until your real interim minister came. And while I was the interim minister here, I went to the library one day, your library, and someone had left a copy of Sam Harris' book, The End of Faith. Well, being somebody interested in theological stuff and faith, I decided to read it. I thought it was about the silliest book I've read in a long time. Now, why was it silly? Because it seemed to me, particularly in the first part of that book, Sam Harris interpreted the Bible as literal, factual truth. Well, if you interpret the Bible as literal, factual truth, then yeah, the Bible's silly. It reminded me a little bit of something I read somewhere. Natalie Angier, who used to write science column for the New York Times, wrote somewhere that to be a Christian, you had to believe in the virgin birth of Jesus. Well, that's a bunch of hooey. I'm a Christian, and I don't believe in the virgin birth of Jesus, and I know a lot of people who don't. You don't have to accept everything you read as literal truth. What I'm talking about is that there are two kinds of fundamentalism. There's fundamentalism on the right, conservative, ultra-conservative, right-wing fundamentalists who interpret the Bible as literal the truth. I saw a bumper sticker. God said it, I believe it, that's it. Now, it seems to me that's a form of pride. That's finite people thinking they have ability to understand infinite truth. But there's also fundamentalism on the left-hand side, Sam Harris being a good example, Natalie Angier being a good example. Those are people, maybe some UUs, maybe even possibly some UUs right here, who dismiss the Bible as nothing but nonsense. That's non-scientific, pre-scientific, a bunch of hooey, I don't have to believe that. Fundamentalism on the left, fundamentalism on the right. I think there's another way. The Bible as ancient myth. You heard what Christy read. The Bible as ancient myth, which has universal and timeless meaning, as much meaning today as then, 2,000, 3,000 years ago. Well, what is myth? Most people interpret myth to be something that's simply not true. Oh, well, that's just myth. That's true, not true. I don't believe it. But Joseph Campbell reminded us that even ancient classical myths are timeless and universal because they deal with the human condition. For example, the myth of Sisyphus. You remember that myth? Sisyphus was condemned to roll a stone up a hill, which then rolled back down. Then he had to roll it back up again and roll back over and over and over. There are times in every one of our lives when we feel just that hopeless and helpless. That's our story. I'm Sisyphus. Some days in my life, and so are you. Or there's the ancient classical story of Odysseus, you know, coming back home, eventually making it, and having to decide to sail between Scylla and Charybdis, that strait where if he went the wrong way, either way, he was going to be in trouble. Hasn't that been our experience? We find a time when we have to somehow figure out how to go between two not very good alternatives. That's as true for me and you as it was true for the Greeks who first read that story. They're true because they're the human condition. Now, myths are not meant to be factual. Myths are not meant to be factual. We do not have Brian Williams or whatever his name is, or David Rose or Charlie Rose, excuse me, or Natalie Morales standing around with a shorthand pen taking notes. Myths in the Bible began as ancient stories told around campfires 2,500, 3,000, 3,500 years ago. Later on, those ancient stories were reduced, and that's the key, reduced to writing. And later on, they were edited multiple times, and every edition was based on whoever the editor was' understanding of faith. Remember, there was nobody there taking notes. This is not New York Times reporting. This is not CNN. These are ancient stories told about the human condition. So I want to just share with you some ancient biblical stories which I believe will have meaning for you and me today. Now, David tells me you're used to about an hour-long sermon, so I'll cut these short. For example, the story that Allison just told to the children. Every one of us has come at times against something that seems too big. It's a giant. How in the world are we going to handle this? Well, maybe we need to just kind of beef up and hunk up and put on our armor and... No, that story is about calm yourself down. Use what you know to be good. You don't have to fight Goliath on Goliath's terms. You don't have to deal with that huge, big something that's giving you trouble on that terms. Here's one, similar. Moses had led the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt, according to the story. Now, who knows whether that story is true or not? There's scholars who believe it's not true. But let's just take it for a while that there's a story about some people who had been slaves being freed to go toward their promised land. Everything's going fine, except they get to the edge of what would be called the Reed Sea, not the Red Sea. They weren't dumb. They didn't go south in order to go back north. That had to been the Red Sea. They went across an isthmus. They went across where the river Nile comes into the Mediterranean. They went across that guy. They went across a tidal estuary, the Reed Sea, like maybe Bacchides Lagoon up here. So they get to the edge of the Reed Sea, water in front, and lo and behold, they feel... fear Pharaoh's army closing in behind. Oh Lord, what do we do now? What did they do? We did what I do and what you do. We complained. They went to Moses and said, "What in the world are you doing to us? We would do better to make bricks and slavery in Egypt than to be out here with a river in front of us, water in front of us, and Pharaoh's army come out. What in the world?" And according to the story, Moses complained to God. And according to the story, God's answer was, "Oh, hush and go ahead. Go forward." And the story is that the waters dried up as soon as one person put their foot in the water. Now, we are everyone just exactly like that. We come in those places in our lives where we are between a rock and a hard place. What in the world are we going to do? The water in front? Trouble behind? What are we going to do? Go forward. Go forward. That's our story. That's my story and yours. Here's another one. There's an ancient story about Moses and the burning bush. Again, now remember, there's no reporter there taking notes. This was told by Moses, if it actually happened, to somebody else, who then told it to somebody else, who then wrote it down, who then edited it. What is the story? Well, the story is that Moses was free from slavery in Egypt, was out in the desert, wherever, keeping his father-in-law's sheep. Suddenly, according to the story, he saw a bush that was burning, but it wasn't burned up, wasn't consumed in fire. So he stopped to look. This unusual thing. He stopped to look. That's poetry, by the way, folks. That's poetry. Not meant to be true. Not meant to be factual. He stopped to look. And he becomes convinced that the meaning of that event is go back and free your relatives and friends from slavery in Egypt. Now, what does Jim Grant say to his burning bush? What do you say to your burning bush? When is justice calling us? When are we being called to take care of someone who's in need? And what do we say? Moses spent a good half day, according to the story, complaining and wishing of another way, and maybe, how about so-and-so? What about coming up? When do we answer the call to do justice? What do you say to your burning bush? Here's one similar to David and Goliath. The story, the background story is Elijah the prophet, who was absolutely persona non grata to King Ahab and Jezebel the queen, had just slaughtered the priests of Baal. And then he got scared. He ran as hard as he could, according to the story, 40 days south, got into Mount Sinai, and there he hid in a cave. And suddenly, he heard something. Thought maybe something. He came to the realization, what in the world are you doing hiding in this cave? Go outside and see what's happening. And he went outside, and there was, big league action. You couldn't get that in a Hollywood thriller. Earthquakes and whirlwinds and tornadoes and storms. And nothing but noise. And then he heard, the scripture says in English, the still small voice. Our son-in-law is a Hebrew scholar, and he said, it says, the awesome silence. Now, isn't that our story? Don't we find ourselves sometime trying to wrestle with some big issue and frightened to death? And we think maybe we can be saved by all the noise? And the story is, shh. We Americans are really great on, don't just stand there, do something. The reality is, don't just do something, stand there. Calm yourself down. Listen. Listen. You may hear something in the awesome silence. In the Christian scriptures, there's a story about Jesus talking to a woman at a well. They'd come from Galilee to Judea on the way to Jerusalem. That's about like coming from Carlsbad, going down to the Del Mar racetrack. They got along about Solana Beach, where they weren't supposed to be, by the way. A really good Jew didn't go that way, but they did. They stopped to get water at a well. The disciples go into the village to get something to eat. Jesus is sitting there, and along comes a woman, and she starts telling him. They start talking a little bit, friendly conversation. And he discovers about her that she's led a rather loose life. So he challenges her about that. And what did she do? Change the subject. Well, you say people ought to worship in Jerusalem. We say people ought to worship here. Jesus, It doesn't make any difference where you worship. What's your life like? What are you doing with your life? What do you want your life to be? We feel maybe sometimes somebody confronts us with the truth, and we would much, much rather talk about something else. And the key to that story is, for me and for you, what do we do with ourselves? Then the hard one is the story of the resurrection of Jesus. I have no idea what that story means. I think the early church put it in to try to prove that Jesus was Christ. There's a book, by the way, called Zealot. If you want to read it, you'll find that. Whether that is true or not is not as important as what is true for me. What grave do I find myself in? When am I buried in work? When am I buried in the grave of discontent? When am I just plain long stuck in a grave of feeling like I don't have enough? How can I be freed from the graves that hold me? One more. I have a lot of time. There's a story in the book of Acts in the New Testament, after Jesus, after the disciples, Peter felt a call. He's on top of a roof taking a nap, and he gets hungry about lunchtime. And suddenly he gets this strange dream that all this food, and now Peter is kosher. Don't give me that stuff. I want the real food. Don't give me that other stuff. And he gets a sense, wait a minute, if that food is from God, maybe I shouldn't call it unclean. At the same time, somebody comes knocking at the door downstairs, and it's people coming from a Roman soldier. And Peter, a good Jew, hated the Romans. And these people say, come and tell us about the love of Jesus. Now, Peter is confronted with a whole new reality. How do I deal with change? This is what I've always believed. Here are these people who I don't even like wanting me to come tell them about love. What in the world? Has that ever happened to you? What do we do about immigrants? What do we do about people we don't like? How do we try to escape when we're called to reach out and share love? Here's what I'm talking about. Suppose sometime you're at the Old Globe or La Jolla Theater. You're sitting in the audience, in the middle of the play, enjoying it, and suddenly over the loudspeaker comes a great big voice saying, Jim Grant, come up on the stage. We have a role just for you. We are so used to being auditors of the Bible, that we fail to act in it. The Bible is our drama. And you'll miss the boat if all you do is sit in the audience and listen. Come up on the stage and act. When are you like Moses at the burning bush? And what do you say to your burning bush? When are you like the children of Israel at the Reed Sea? And what do you say? Do you complain or go forward? When are you like David, confronted by the giant? We're called to act, not just to listen, not just to be auditors. So what have I said? I've said there are a couple of kind of pride. There's the pride of people who just blindly accept Scripture, Bible. And there's the pride of people on the other side who just blindly reject Bible. I've talked about myths, and that myths, if they're really a myth, have timeless meaning because they deal with the human condition. You can look in Greek myths, Roman myth, any myth, you can find it. You can find it in the myth of Christmas and all the light stuff. And the primitive people who were scared out of their wits because the days were going, light was growing shorter and shorter. You can find it because they're our story. They're my story. They're your story. These are stories about the human condition, which have meaning for us. I hope you and I can find some of these stories. Don't just blindly reject the Bible. Thank you for listening. It hadn't been an hour yet.